We're on open number five here, open-minded humility, five in our discussion of sanctification. And this is the title, the broad title, open-minded humility versus quenching the spirit. And we haven't dealt with the quenching of the spirit yet, but we're laying out right now what is meant, what we mean by open-minded humility. You can see a premise there, though, in that verses, that we quench the spirit. I'm going to try to argue. I'm arguing the wrong way if we do not display open-minded humility. But we've been looking at first open-minded humility, then we will deal with quenching the spirit, would be number two. So under open-minded humility, we covered the introduction, then humility, the acknowledgement principle, risk principle, distrust principle, and we come now to the principle in humility of love. In the context of mutual upbuilding, of encouraging and exhorting one another in the knowledge of Christ for holy living, we need a humble spirit. By the practice of love and how we learn, we prove that we are disciples of Christ. By this all people will know you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. And if we want to connect love with learning, well, I want to take a look at humble love, the humility aspect of love, or that the humility is a slice of the love pie, and therefore that slice has the ingredients that love has. Well, let's look at the description of humble love. Paul says, love does not boast, it is not arrogant or rude. So let's look at those three things. Love is not arrogant. Arrogance is distinctively a way of thinking about yourself. This stress of thinking is strikingly evident in Romans 12:3, where Paul refers to thinking four times in the same verse. If I translated it literally, here's what he says in 12:3 of Romans. And watch the word, it'll emphasize. Do not think more highly of yourself than you ought to think, but think so as to think soberly. Stress on thinking about and with regard to yourself. Do not think more highly of yourself. Moreover, thought shows up in a corresponding manner of life. What the proud think reflects itself in words to oneself, to others, and in mannerisms that reflect words like, my view is better than all other views. Other views are not worth considering. And thus other views are quickly dismissed, that would be the action. Or, I have heard it before, so I do not need to hear it again. In dialogue, if you're proud, do not have love, you treat others with scorn. It may even be done unwittingly, but what does it mean to treat someone with scorn? It is to make them feel uncomfortable, small, worthless, or stupid. You know, in your presence, in the relationship, in the discussion, however you widen this out, making other people feel unworthy in relation to you by your actions, by your gestures, by your words. The proud person embarrasses others and cannot see that he does it or admit that he does it. Instead, if humble, we will engage discussion without a leveling spirit, which you know means merely destructive criticism, to tear others down. When you tear other people down, what are you doing for yourself? Lifting yourself up. If humble, then if I must criticize, I will start with myself and be hard on myself in the sense that I hold myself to any standard that I expect from others. If I must criticize, I must do so tenderly, taking a speck from someone's eye. And do that, if you're going to do it at all, tenderly. Thus, before I criticize, I begin with earnest self-criticism. Otherwise, I display a proud spirit. Of course, course, we should have answers, 1 Peter 3:15, and we should engage in earnest refutation of error, contradiction of the truth, Titus 1:9, but we must always consider other views fairly, with fairness, and treat other people kindly. All right, that's love is not arrogant. At any point, this is very, I went ahead and I have this like 2.5 pages here. I usually don't, I try to shoot for one, you know, but I'm thinking this is so straightforward. But we don't have to finish all of this today. I just want to kind of talk it through and have us just absorb the nature of humility. And, you know, we talked about things like acknowledging our sin and our comparative smallness, taking the risk of being wrong, and having a distrust in ourselves. But we want to add other, it compounds, there are a number of issues of love that come into play if you're truly humble. And, you know, Paul indicates that these things about being arrogant, which I started with, boasting and rudeness are the opposite of love, and they are qualities of pride. Kind of bring that out in each one. Now we talked about arrogance. Stop me if you want. Yes, ma'am.
I was going to say, you know, there is no objective measure that two people agree on as to what constitutes being humble or gentle. You know, I mean, you can with a clear conscience lay down all the pillows that you think needs to be laid down, and the person you're dealing with still is offended. Mm-hmm. I suppose what really matters. This is the question: is what really matters just your conscience before God? You know, I mean.
Yes, but I mean, you know, as the conscience needs to look at performance and in our actions, there's a certain objectivity about gentleness. I think. I mean, I think we can be firm and we can contradict error in a firm way that's gentle and kind and respectful. So I think that's what I'm trying to say. I know that it's still people may not, if we criticize on that part, and the person feels like we broke their bones, they don't feel like we were gentle. There's a very subjective side to this.
Well, that's the question. If they feel like their bones were broken, were you gentle? That's the question I'm really asking.
And I guess I'm trying to say, I think gentleness does have a certain objectivity about it. And it's not governed by how people feel. Now, I know I'm saying we're not to make people feel, not to, in our manner or our way, make people feel stupid or unworthy. But if we preach the gospel in truth and we're talking about matters of truth and someone's bones are like broken in their conscience by the truth, they may not feel that we've been very gentle.
Right.
I think we have to judge ourselves and our conscience, but we have to judge our actions. Are we proceeding, you know, did we proceed in a way that was fair and kind and, you know, that type of, those qualities, I think, would be reflected in that. The arrogant, proud spirit is not going to even considering that with regard to others, and my views are just they're right, and you know, just run right over people or whatever. You know?
I suppose in that situation, someone who is not arrogant might, even if you feel like you're doing all that you can, you might stop and say it's too much right now, or back down or something. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there are other factors like that too. Yeah, there are other factors that this is in a dynamic. All these things like are in a dynamic circumstance, so. We can't lay down like rules and formulas. I mean, we're trying to say open-minded humility is a couple hooks to hang a bunch of things on. But we have to just keep talking about this cluster of Christian graces, and we need wisdom, the art of godly living, to apply these things. So we just keep reflect on and try to put them into action for the good of others. Yes.
So in the milieu of all of that, we still have to realize that, like Christ said, you know, I came not to bring peace, So when we talk about Christ, we're going to offend people. You know, and people are going to be offended just by conversational information, giving of information. You know. And they will be offended. You know.
But they should be offended by the truth, not by your failure to interact with them in a humble manner.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they
should. That should be based on.
I'm just saying it's complicated.
Because we are, we're complicated, and we still have. This is our standard to guide us in love, in humble love toward people, and whatever their needs may be. If you had something else you wanted to add to that,
I got a little sidetracked there for just a second.
Coming back.
The bottom line, and maybe somebody brought this up, but it's that. We can try the best we can prayerfully in our words to not be unnecessarily offensive.
Yeah.
But the word of God is offensive.
Yeah.
You know, whether one is a Christian or a non-Christian, let that happen and not us. Did you have a thought?
Well, I was just going to say that to me, their response, I would not use as a gauge whatsoever. I would just look at my own conscience.
Well, we have no control over
that. Right.
Do we?
It's just,
yes.
If someone gets out irate and offended, but I come across as a very gentle, loving, 1 Peter 3:15, if I come across in a loving way, then that's it. The gospel, like you said, is what offends.
Sure.
And this goes with a lot of other, rebukes and other doctrine or whatnot, any type of conversation can get someone offended,
I hate rebukes, don't I?
I'm talking about even your very actions, how many times have we entered into a conversation and said, I'm going to be very careful here, and at the end you go, what just happened? and your own actions are being inquisitive.
I just did this last night. You start all loving, and then all of a sudden you get a little passionate over the top, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, we're like in a heated debate.
What does that mean?
I just did this last night with a friend.
Exactly.
And I called him back, and I was like, I'm sorry, I just wanted to, I don't know what happened there.
Yeah. Well, that's a good response. That's a good response.
Yeah, and it's an ongoing thing, so there's that. That's part of the dynamic. There's the context of repeated things. So I think, though, the trouble for us and others is our pride. This is the thorny thing that's underneath there for us all. That makes it real complicated. Pride is a sin, of course. Arrogance. Let's try boasting in this connection. When tempted to boast, we are concentrating on the wrong, or we're concentrating the wrong way, I'm sorry. We're concentrating the wrong way on what we have attained, or think we have attained, in prestige, accomplishments, possessions, knowledge, etc. Being boastful refers to self-applause, showing that the proud person wants the elevated view he has of himself to be shared by others. In applauding oneself, praise is being sought from those who hear. A proud person wants others to see, hear, and acknowledge his accomplishments. It is being proud not to acknowledge that all the distinguishing advantages you have come from God. Hence this text. Who made you to differ? What do you have that you have not received? Then why boast? So it's a humble acknowledgement of that we have received whatever we have in knowledge, if we're talking on that level, or attainments, or money, or prestige, or whatever it may be in life, to acknowledge that what makes us different, if made us differ, is a gift of God. We've received it from God, so there's no reason to boast or to be seeking self-applause or the applause of men. I think boasting, love is not boastful, then it comes in that way. Let me try rudeness, and then we can kind of pull that together before some duties here. But love is not rude. Do you intuitively connect rudeness with pride? You know, would you do that if you were thinking about rudeness and, well, love is not going to be rude, so, but does it connect? How does it connect with pride? It seems to me that from one angle, rudeness is a wrong view of oneself, thinking too highly of yourself, that comes out in context of God-ordained of human authority structures. Pride is what often drives disrespect or manners, the lack of common courtesies. Unkind actions have deep roots in a proud spirit. So I think that that's where the rudeness relates to pride and boasting and arrogance as unloving. And it has to do with authority structures and not and being disrespectful, not showing good manners, not being courteous.
So rudeness can't flow both. The rudeness doesn't flow both ways, up the authority and down the authority structure.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that it. Well, wouldn't we? I think all of these would have the implication in every authority structure issue, like honor your father and mother. That also implies that father and mother are to carry themselves in an honorable way.
Yeah.
So yes,
okay.
However you asked your question, the point is it does go both ways because the implications are it just mutatis mutandis, you know, make the necessary adjustments to whether you're an authority, one in authority or one under authority. The arrogance will display itself in discourtesy. All right, any thoughts about just about that text? That's just to kind of lay a background about love in relation to these three things. And I thought we can then kind of isolate duties of humble love. And I'm keeping having in my mind the idea of open-minded humility, the mutual exhortation between people, especially between the family members and the family of God. So we can, as I put it here, infer to the opposite of pride to turn from it to humble love and just kind of isolate some duties and just ponder them to take them in and seek their effect in our lives.
Pastor, I have a question. Should you shun being shown accolades, for example, being congratulated for something and somebody says good job or whatever, you know, should you...
I don't think so, just point blank. You know, show honor, you know, you got the other way around. Give honor to whom honor is due. So if you give honor to whom honor is due, the one who is receiving that honor
is to receive it. Yeah.
You know,
sure.
there's a proper interchange there. So it's not that, you know, it's not being in a position of honor, knowing it even. Like if you know you're, as a parent, you have a place of honor, and you know it, that doesn't make you proud. You know, but it's how we, is a disposition of how we carry ourselves toward others, you know, within those structures. Well, I just isolated four duties. If you have any others, and I'm trying to, obviously this is very like application oriented, so I'm trying to just kind of think it out in ways that we would express this. First duty, commit your greatness to God, because we're talking about humility. If I really want to be someone great, I must pursue the excellent pathway of love. The greatest among you is the servant, Luke 22. Here is the opposite of pride. I must leave it to God to give what greatness he chooses, how it will be made evident, and when it will become a reality in my experience of recognition, like maybe I should be recognized on certain things, but I don't get it, you know, or something like that as a parent or whatever. But in my experience of recognition, value, and justification in the now or in the not yet. So we leave our greatness to God. So any way that we would be exalted or encouraged along the way, and something of that nature. It's back also to that text in Corinthians on who makes you to differ. All right, so there's one duty. Commit your greatness to God. Second, let your yieldedness be evident to all. We've kind of overlap on some of these verses more than once, but pride shows up in seeking the greatest regard. For the arrogant person, his ideas are the best and are to be followed by everyone else. There may be degrees of that too, you know, but this is stating it point blank. The exhortation here is to yield to the wants, the wishes, the needs, the goals, the desires, the perspectives of others in little things and in larger things. This doesn't mean that you rejoice in error or falsehood, but it's a way of being, having a yielded spirit. And I'm just kind of going across the board here as well as, now to be more specific, this is especially true in the life of the church and in the Christian home. It is a great quality of humble love to have husband and wife trying to outdo each other in yieldedness. You know, where you say, no, you. Now watch how we say that. It's no, you. No, you. It's not no, you, blankety blank or something. It's no, you. Well, no, you. No, you. No, you. That outdo each other in yieldedness, trying to show humble love in the home. And then in the context of mutual building in the church, of encouraging and exhorting one another in the knowledge of Christ for holy living, there we need a humble spirit of love. Remember, I keep going back to the text. I think it's Hebrews 4:13. We need mutual exhortation because of the deceitfulness of sin. And so that requires a humble spirit, a loving spirit, and the mutual love of the family that is humble in its look at things and in mannerisms in relation to others. All right, so we have commit your greatness to God, let your yieldedness be evident to all. Replace scorn with kindness. I think scorn does have kind of the opposite of kindness. To scorn is to belittle by words, gestures, or actions, to make people feel small or unworthy. That's different than when we bring conviction or maybe the gospel offends. You know, this is talking about words, gestures, actions that embarrass people, make people feel small or unworthy. It comes out in sneering ridicule, directly or indirectly given. Sometimes we learn how to improve when we are scorned, but it still hurts. I recall being aware of how I spoke, pronounced words by being ridiculed for using words like chimley for chimney, and tagger for tiger, and I used to go around talking about the Detroit Tigers. And then some kids on time on my block, I can remember this, and all of them, I can picture it right now. I can still feel the embarrassment. It's not the Detroit Tigers. You always say the Detroit Tigers. Where did I get that? You know, then we have the word like, I'm not necessarily putting this out phonetically properly, but we might say library instead of library. People might make fun of us for mispronunciation. But instead of scorning, and scorning may come out in direct ways, and sometimes I learned a number of things by being scorned. So we can learn that way, but it should be by kind words and deeds that we seek to protect the feelings of others. This exalts others while curbing self-exaltation. So remember the arrogance and the self-applause, this all intertwines. There's a pride thing floating around underneath this.
Just the thought, because it's always been a thorn in my side that I find it very difficult to say something positive to an individual when they're screwing up, you know, and consistently screwing up. So, if you're in management, so to speak, how do you say something positive, you know? Like the old joke, you know, about for a fat guy, you don't sweat much. So it's a, you never heard that one? That's a left-handed compliment.
You can check that off the list.
For a fat guy, you don't sweat much.
It is more of a dig than a compliment, though.
Yeah.
That's more of a dig.
But how do you give a nice criticism of an individual?
Well, you know, in a management situation, wouldn't it be like in a lot of, even with children, like, it's to take people aside privately, for one.
Oh, yeah.
It's protecting their, you know, I'm just saying, there are various ways that we might go about a gentle correction of something, a child or an employee or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it maybe begins there, and then, but you know, there's a gentle speech. There's gingerly choosing our words, even though it has to be said that the mistakes made this month are like they're way over the off the curve, you know, way off, they're way out of line, and you can go through that and work on those, you know, that's the honest truth.
Yeah.
But it's just a guarded and careful and, you know, way, and not a sneering and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's, I mean, I think it's just, there's a lot of it's the mannerisms, just like we talked about before.
Sure.
This is a spirit of gentleness and that we're trying to, you know, we need to inculcate and then convey as much as we can. So there are all kinds of situations for this.
We need to do a lot of talking to ourselves before we get to that point.
Yeah. It seems to
me. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Number one, what kind of a relationship do we have with these people? And is the offense, is it truly theirs? I mean, is there a real bona fide, honest offense? Okay, like for instance, years ago I was working with this gal that supposedly was a professing Christian. And that little gal said, OMG, all the time. I mean, all the time. And they just, I mean, it took me a little while.
Cringe.
Yes. But she took it well. I finally had to say something. I felt it was bona fide. There are other times it's like, you know, you have to just kind of eat crow, or, you know, I mean, is it really that important for us to be her judge?
Right.
Or him?
Yeah, this is the kind of thing I face constantly with my tennis friends, you know, which they want to use the Lord's name in vain. They often use the Lord's name in vain, and I usually do not say anything to them on the court. Once in a while, I've talked about court courtesies. I'm not supposed to use that kind of language, or different, you know, I've tried to find different ways. You know. It's not always easy to know what to do, but it seems like when I can talk to them in private, it's been better.
But that always works, I think,
you know,
is when you do work in private, talk to the person.
Yeah. But sometimes it's just like it's so blatant. I mean, at one time the fella, he said he served in, I think I was the one who called his serve out. And he said, it hit the goddamn line. And I responded and I said, God, I don't, you know, look, God didn't damn this line. But I saw it out, you know, and we just went on playing. But, so I don't know, was that the right response? You know, you just, but sometimes in the moment of the public, just to counter so I don't know, you know, some of this is just very, but I try to be very gentle with these men. I hear this a lot, things like this a lot.
Yeah.
And they know, sometimes they say, well, I got to watch my language, I'm with the preacher today. That's what the guy said the other day. I'm with the preacher today, I got to watch my language, you know. But then they forget.
Yeah.
You know, so,
it's just
they need to remember God, they need to remember before the Lord, not the preacher, but, you know. All right, anyway, these are, I think, we need to be kind in our manner, words, and be teachable and show it. Stubborn pride is a negative spirit that has its own way of polarizing conversation by always correcting the statements of others rather than receiving correction and holding the tongue, maybe to just take it in. Maybe it's right or wrong correction, but you hold the tongue is difficult, James tells us. you will not change my mind, so why bother, sounds wise, because, you know, why waste the time? You're not going to change my mind, why bother? Sounds wise, but it dismisses the critical need of mutual exhortation because of the deceitfulness of sin. And let's try disagreement with pastoral exhortations. When you disagree with pastoral exhortations or correction from others, and you say to yourself, and perhaps to others, I disagree. Be careful. Not saying that you might, I'm not saying you don't have the right to disagree, but just be careful. It may be that you think you stand but are in danger of falling. If you say, I don't need this, instruction, correction, interaction, then mark it down, you probably need it in a big way. You will never find the good if you are unwilling to take a hard and possibly painful look at yourself by the help of mutual exhortation. So, I'll be glad to get your thoughts on this. I'm throwing out thoughts on this here, but I disagree may be a subtle sin. Much depends on context. When you are in a discussion, I would say it is not wise to use the expression, I disagree. At least I'd say that's 99% of the time, or, you know, it polarizes, is why I'm saying that. Sometimes it may be necessary for clarity, then it will be, yes, I respectfully disagree. Followed by, let me give my rationale and hear your response to it. If I am unwilling to engage hearty interchange and godly argument, then the I disagree phrase is a smokescreen for closed-mindedness. So some of this may be needing to be qualified, but any thoughts up to that point? I'll go to another example thing, but yes, sir.
I think I would probably say rather than I disagree or respectfully, so I don't get it.
You say I don't get it?
Yeah, I can't see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think that would be a little less combative than I disagree.
Yeah, in a way, that sort of invites a little bit more explanation, and that keeps the discussion open rather than closing. So, yeah, I would be more...
Because I've told you that before.
Are you hinting that there's some correcting here?
No. Okay. If I don't get it, you're usually pretty good to make sure I do, or at least say why I don't, you know?
Anyone else? Let me, a similar point, let me go on with the next paragraph. For example, if you disagree with your pastor teacher and never discuss it with him, of course with many excuses, probably really, really good ones too, you know, then, I'm claiming here, you are on the edge of pride. If not fully in the muck of pride already. This is a case where seeking out different views, seeking discussion with those who disagree with you, is most relevant for one another in love and mutual exhortation due to the trickery of sin. And iron sharpens iron. A sparring partner advances a boxer. It's a good discipline. Whenever you say or think, whenever this comes to your mind, or say it out loud, I don't agree, I would suggest this discipline. Ask yourself, do I have a pride problem? Am I thinking of myself more highly than I ought? A humble person will oppose taking the hard line quickly and inflexibly. The humble person takes the hard line quickly and person will oppose that. Alright, let me suggest the two-tier problem in interaction with your pastor or interaction with other people like this, like we're talking here about one another in conversation. The problem is, I think, often two-tiered. Particularly there is some issue of correction, whatever it is we're talking about, some issue. But generally there is the constant tendency of pride. Which is worse? Most likely the worst thing is the general disposition of pride, especially when the particular issue arises directly from pride and is driven by it. Even if the correction is inaccurate and unfair, the proud spirit that is aroused is the most important real problem. So I think, you know, this is a lot about the problem of the sin of pride here. Maybe trying to just get at how we might manifest it or have it in our minds, even if it's not outwardly. I'll finish this paragraph, next paragraph, get your comments thus willingly, kind of exhorting you here, willingly receive teaching, admonition, and correction, invited. Recall the fact that pride makes us uneasy when we are exposed. It may make us angry and lead us to being picky. Picky-unish, I was going to write in there. And fault-finding, judgmental, negative, censorious. You can be sure that whenever, and I think this is probably 100%, whenever you're criticized on something, one of your first thoughts will be, that person does this or that. You will have in your mind some fault about that other person. Before you ever, that's the first thing. Then you have to suppress that and get down to, well, was this really legitimate, and try to deal with it. Maybe they do have faults, but a judgmental spirit will often be aroused by our pride if we're admonished. Or just something crosses us in various ways. Humility will dispose us to accept and even prize correction. Just think of the tennis player, the number one in the world, who keeps saying, I have a good coach and he's helping me. I'm pressing on for something better. That there's a certain humility. The guy's number one in the world and he submits to the instruction of his coach.
He's probably better than who we'd probably beat on the court anyway, yeah. But yeah, I agree.
His coach could never keep up with him at all. No. But he submits to that guidance and correction, you know. It's a humility thing. At least it's got, you know, various aspects of it should be there. It is seen as a work of a friend in kindness, that is, correction is. Peter says, clothe yourselves with humility. He weaves humility before God and before man into the same fabric of godly conduct. So, you know, if you're not humble toward men, you are not humble toward God. I mean, you know, we can talk about how much we are religious if we are proud, have a proud spirit toward other people. That's pride toward God. Can't separate the fabric. All right, just Edwards, I have a quote from Edwards. Earnestly seek and prayerfully cherish a humble spirit, and God shall walk with you here below. And when a few more days shall have passed, he will receive you to the honors bestowed on his people at Christ's right hand. From Sheridan, his fruits. In a very fundamental and foundational way, love is more important than doctrine. Of course, love for one another in the body of Christ should drive us to seek the truth, because 1 Corinthians 13:6, love rejoices in the truth. Love does. Truth is extremely important, and love demands that we strive after it. However, love sets the only proper tone of truth seeking. The graces of love are the most important aspect of the process of learning, of being disciples in Christ's church for holiness, through open, frank, and charitable discussion. And so then we're going to move to the openness side in a couple weeks. We won't have the Bible study next week, but I'll move to openness next. Any other thoughts on this? Any of these things? Again, these are kind of, you know, this is application and trying to get some illustration for, you know, particulars of our living. it's much wider than just conversations between Christians, but this is very important for the one anothering of Christian conversation and mutual upbuilding in the gospel. So,
do you think you know this open mind humility, right? Dealing with other people that it can't be a trivial thing, given the fact that we're usually more callous to people the further out of our circle mm-hmm. we get, you know. So, for example, Jason, you know, I met Jason today, you know, that him and I met somewhere outside, you know, a discussion might be, and things we disagree might be very, it could be because of our own sinfulness, it could be very callous and short. But now that he's here at church with me and I know him, you know, I'm going to go that extra step too because I know him. It seems to me that what I'm saying is a good guard against the opposite of what we're trying to say here is doing the work of getting to know someone first. You know, you can't just be a drive-by Christian, that sort of thing. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe there's not a time in life to do that sort of thing, but maybe you should. I don't know.
There you're talking about love. You know, getting love is that welcome, getting past the strangeness. Love seeks to get past, you know, show hospitality. In essence, is work at getting past the strangeness with other people. And that's, we're to love our neighbor, and we're to love the family, the people of God, and now those outside. But it's very challenging to love the outside who may hate us and do despitefully use us. Jesus says we're to love them and not take a sword against them, but, you know, like we saw in the text, it's to show them love and to bless them that curse you, and the things he taught in the Sermon on the Mount. So it's, you know, I think, I see what you mean about how it moves out from the family, and it has, part of it has to do with that responsibility of trying to get past the strangeness with people.
Yeah.
So that we can have a meaningful conversation. And so that's part of the picture of the dynamic of it. It can't be the same immediately, you know, that it can be later on as you get to know someone better. And that's, my wife kind of mentioned a little bit about that, about it. And some things that you would say to someone depends on what your relationship is to them. So there's things you wouldn't say to someone based on the relationship you have with them or the... what you don't have with them, you don't know them.
I was thinking, if you're at home, say in the kitchen, and you can hear the television, and you hear someone saying something that you just completely disagree with, and you go around, and it's like Pastor Stella saying it, you would change your whole feeling, wouldn't you? You know, if I went to the television and I saw you saying it, someone I know saying it, not saying you, I'm just saying arbitrarily. Someone you know saying it versus just hearing the voice, it totally changes your whole
position.
Even though
you disagree with it.
Even though you initially disagree and you had these feelings, you go around and you see that somebody you no one care about.
Sure, absolutely. That's what this is trying to say. It should be that. That's where when it's the brothers and sisters, then we have every reason to be welcoming and have that gentle spirit, even if we react against it as this isn't true, I don't think how this is true. We're going to then feel that we have to try to find some way to be like minded and try to work on it and try to strive after like mindedness and that kind of thing. That's why it's always our duty to, with all other believers wherever they are in the world over all of church history, to try to figure out how to be of one mind. So it's a big project we have. You know, it's. Needs a cluster of graces. We're just calling them open-minded humility for short. Yeah. All right, well, with that, let's wait till 2 weeks to continue this, and the Lord bless you all this week, and hope to see you next week for communion. And hopefully you'll be friends.